ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today, we talk to Dr. Frank Romano about his adventures overseas. Maya's Mix gives us the hits from 2011, and we feature an audiobook from the best-selling Hollow series all right here after the news you want to know. Hello, thank you for joining us. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Lucia Sherman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Legendary rocker Neil Young took his campaign for higher fidelity digital sound to the stage of the technology conference, saying a giant of the industry was on his side, the late Steve Jobs. Young said the Apple co-founder was such a fan of music that he didn't use his iPod in its digitally compressed files at home, which really surprises me. Instead, he used a physical format well known to have better sound. Steve Jobs was a pioneer of digital music. His legacy is tremendous, Young said. But when he went home, he listened to vinyl. Ooh, yeah.
It's throwback, huh?
Yeah. Young told the Dive Into Media conference Tuesday that he spoke with Jobs about creating a format that has 20 times the fidelity of files in the most current digital formats, including MP3. I talked to Steve about it. We were working on it, he said. You've got to believe if he lived long enough, he would eventually try to do what I'm trying to do.
Keep on rocking in the free world, huh?
Oh, I love Neil Young. He's such a brilliant artist.
Have you ever seen him play?
No. Have you?
I have, yeah.
When?
Scott Stadium, Dave Matthews World Tour.
Oh.
First stop, his hometown, Charlottesville.
Wow.
And Neil Young came out on stage and played with him. They did All Along the Watchtower.
Oh, was it a surprise? Did he just kind of show up?
Yeah, and... yeah, right in the middle of the performance. You know, everybody went crazy.
Everybody went, woo!
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
I'm a huge fan of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Always have been.
Well, Neil Young might prefer the horse and buggy, but in Europe, they have a new car coming out. It's a revolutionary fold-up car designed in Spain's Basque country as an answer to urban stress and pollution, and it was unveiled before hitting European cities in 2013. The Jerico, the Basque word for urban, is an electric two-seater 1.5 meters long with no doors, whose motor is located in the wheels. It folds up like a child's collapsible stroller for easy parking. Dreamt up by Boston's MIT Media Lab, the concept was developed by a consortium of seven small Basque firms under the name Jerico Driving Mobility, with a prototype unveiled by the European Commission president. Its makers are in talk with a number of European cities to assemble the tiny cars that can run 120 kilometers, or 75 miles, without a recharge, and whose speed is electronically set to respect city limits. The vehicle's four wheels turn at right angles to facilitate sideways parking in tight spaces. I could really use that. They envision it as a city-owned vehicle up for hire, like the fleets of bicycles available in many European cities, or put up for sale privately at around 12,500 euros. Several cities have showed interest, including Berlin, Barcelona, San Francisco, and Hong Kong, and talks are underway with Paris, London, Boston, Dubai, and Brussels.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I like it. I find it really interesting that it obeys inner city traffic laws.
You don't have to worry about getting a speeding ticket.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe they would create something that would be able to do that, but then we've been to the moon, so
Yeah, anything's possible. Meet George Jetson. It's finally arrived. Here it is. Let's fold it up and take it with you.
I remember one time I saw Jetson's cartoon, and they had a telephone that had a screen on it. And I remember looking at that thinking, oh, that's impossible. That will be absolutely, no one will be able to see one another when they're talking on
the
telephone.
Now you have the iPhone
and
Skype.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I know. I think the car sounds terrific. And we need something to help our poor planet.
Yeah, with the energy crisis and everything, for sure.
So they were pretty much ahead of their time. Can you believe that?
The Jetsons, yeah. I mean,
George and Jane.
There you go. I like your point, though, too, about the energy crisis. You know, having these kinds of cars in a city will definitely help free up a lot of gasoline, I guess, to go to, you know, semi trucks or, you know, long haul instead of used up in an urban city. You can just use electric car.
Yeah,
and save
it's
all
a great
that
idea.
Power.
Actually, there's a lot. I saw something recently on solar freeways. They're trying to implement solar freeways to simultaneously charge the batteries as the cars drive over the road.
Like an alternator.
Yes.
Amazing.
I know. But they're afraid there's not enough money and blah, 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 blah.
You can't drive at night with that.
No. The sun, that doesn't work that way. You goofball. The upcoming remake of 21 Jump Street will premiere as the centerpiece of Austin's South by Southwest Film Conference and Festival. The action comedy stars Jonah Hill, I like Jonah Hill, and Channing Tatum in a big screen version of the 1980s Johnny Depp, and we all love Johnny Depp, TV series. It will screen March 12th at South by Southwest, which runs March 9th through the 17th. The conference also announced its closing film will be Big Easy Express, a documentary about the group of touring folk bands including Mumford and Sons. South by Southwest earlier announced that The Cabin in the Woods, an anticipated horror film co-written by Josh Whedon, will open the festival. On Wednesday, the festival announced its full slate of 130 features at South by Southwest 2012. Those were selected from a record 1,957 feature-length submissions. Wow.
Amazing.
Lot of independent filmmakers out there.
Definitely. And you can go to the South by Southwest Film Festival and then make it back to Ashland for the Ashland Film Festival.
There you go. Yeah.
So, Lucia, do you know who else's film will be premiering at the South by Southwest Film Festival?
No. Tell me.
Amara Kopakova. Fat Kid
I
Rules
remember
the World.
Her. She was one of our interviews.
Yeah, we have another interview coming up with her.
She's, really?
Yeah, she's moved cross country again. So she's
where? She was in Seattle, right?
Right. Now she's in New York. So
she is. Why did she move?
Back taxes. No, she's an artist. You know, she was inspired.
Wow. Yeah. Well, New York is the creative hub. One of them, anyway.
That's true.
But I think Ashland's a pretty creative hub with our own film festival here and the Shakespeare Festival and Get Behind Me Now, Stay There and Blackstone Audio.
And Blackstone Audio. And another creative hub would be in Boston, Massachusetts.
And
Harvard
tell me about
University.
It.
Joe Green is most likely the Facebook roommate you've never heard of, but the Harvard graduate is trying to make a difference in the world. Green lacks the name recognition of company creator Mark Zuckerberg. Green was one of Zuckerberg's roommates at the University of Harvard in 2004 and was asked by the young man, who is now worth an estimated $17.5 billion, to drop out of the Ivy League school to join him in building the social media website, which filed this week for a public offering. After the two had gotten into some hot water with Harvard for a previous project, which was dramatized in the Oscar-winning film The Social Network. Great movie, huh?
Oh, wonderful film.
Green ultimately told Zuckerberg no, because the school had threatened him with expulsion. His decision not to join Zuckerberg could be considered a $400 million mistake. Now, despite his initial decision, he's back in the Facebook fold, running a for-profit business called Causes, a Facebook application and website that lets friends suggest to friends a charity, social cause, and even political candidate. The stated goal of causes is to empower anyone with a good idea or passion for change to impact the world.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, Facebook is amazing, and it is a driver for social change. And I guess Green's company has raised over $50 million for 50,000 charities so far. So yeah, I mean, he's doing a lot of great work.
You know, Cyrus, one of the programs he's instituted is Laptops for Kids, which is a program that gives laptops for younger kids in India and other countries. So they have a hand up in terms of technology. It's a wonderful, wonderful program.
Definitely. I mean, that's important. Yeah, I love that. A hand up instead of a hand out.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of a family that's all about social change, Ethel Kennedy prefers coming to the Sundance Film Festival when she's not the star of a movie. She's been to Sundance in the past to see films by her daughter, documentary filmmaker Rory Kennedy. This time, the widow of U.S. Senator Robert Kennedy is the focus of her daughter's film, the Sundance premiere, Ethel. Ethel Kennedy says she likes it better coming to Sundance just to see Rory's films. Though initially reluctant when her daughter proposed the documentary, Ethel Kennedy opens up on screen with candid recollections about the family, including falling in love at first sight with her future husband on a ski trip to Canada. "He was standing in front of an open fireplace," she said in an interview alongside her daughter. "I walked in the door, turned and saw him, and I thought, whoa." In the film, Ethel Kennedy discusses campaigning for her husband and his brother, President John F. Kennedy, the similarities and differences between her family and the Kennedy clan, and raising 11 children after her husband's assassination in 1968. At the time, she was pregnant with Rory Kennedy, her youngest child, who was born 6 months after her father's death. As a widow with such a big family, Ethel Kennedy said she coped simply by going about what she needed to do and tending her children. "After my daughter was born, life just happened to take care of daily living, which almost had practically nothing to do with me," she said. "I just started taking carpools in the morning, and by the time I was finished dropping the last child off, I'd pick up the first one. And then, you know, I'm putting on all the galoshes." Well, you get the idea. In Ethel, airing later this year on HBO, Ms. Kennedy coaxes sweet, sad, and funny anecdotes out of her mother and her siblings. The Kennedys recollect their mother's devotion to steeping her children in world affairs, her mischievous sense of humor, and her rebellious streak, which led to run-ins with the law. Boy, that surprised me when I read that, Cyrus. Huh. Such as a time she was charged with rustling horses after freeing some mistreated animals. I love that. Through photos and home movies, the film offers an intimate look at the life of the Kennedys, the family relating how Robert Kennedy and his children slid down a banister in the White House after his brother was elected, and how the president once cautioned his fun-loving sister-in-law not to push his cabinet members into the swimming pool anymore. In front of her daughter's camera, Ethel Kennedy is unable to discuss the grief over her husband's death. "When we lost Daddy," she begins, then tears up and tells her daughter, "Talk about something else." Rory Kennedy, whose past Sundance documentaries include the Emmy-winning Ghost of Abu Ghraib, said Ethel probably was her most challenging film because it was so personal. "I know my mother, and she's just terrific, and I have such admiration and respect for her. She's such a character, too. I really think she's one of the great untold stories, not just because of all the events she's lived through," Rory Kennedy said, "but also because she's just a wonderful person, and I hope that comes across in the film. She's so funny, and she's such an inspiration to me." Well, she sounds like an inspiration to me, too. I had no idea she was such a complex and wonderful person.
You know, I wasn't around when her husband was a senator, but definitely the entire Kennedy family has had such an impact on this country. They're still the first family for sure.
Absolutely.
And they go through so many ups and downs. And once again, here we are, on the Today Show just last week, they had an interview with an intern of John F. Kennedy. I guess he was having an affair with her in the White House. And so, you know, this has all just hit the news.
You know,
and
you know,
Rory, you know, coming back with this in next month. So here, you know, just like the Kennedys always are.
It's bouncing back.
Bouncing back.
But, you know, people, all politicians have their skeletons. But looking back at the Kennedy legacy, they were true giants in terms of social change. And that is the legacy I prefer to look at. These two men, and along with their cabinet and administration, along with Johnson, President Johnson, helped create such change for all of us here in America. And that's what I'm going to remember.
Yeah, Lucia, wasn't it Robert Kennedy who said, "Some men see things as they are and say why. I dream of things that never were and say why not."
Wow, that just gave me goosebumps. That embodies his life, that statement right there. Great, great that you remembered that.
Just came right off the top of my head.
Very good.
Yeah, I paid attention to school for sure.
I'm sure you did.
Speaking of quotes, how can indie bookstores survive Amazon's dominance? In an article published at Poetry Foundation, the publisher suggested they think about poetry readers. People who read poetry are the unsung customer base for independent bookstores. Instead of competing, indie bookstores can take advantage of their status as local businesses within their communities. The service a bookstore provides isn't just book selling, it's being the cultural center that book lovers need in their communities. Kind of like, Bloomsbury Books here in Ashland.
Yeah, I love Bloomsbury Books.
Yeah, and then the poets and talent at the downtown poetry reading with Dave Harvey.
Cyrus,
yeah.
You're a poet.
That's true.
You are a great poet, and one day your poetry will be read by many across the world.
Well, thanks, Lucia.
You're welcome.
For all of you
are
out
great.
There, you can always go on to Smashwords and check out Fear and Loathing in the State of Jefferson.
Yeah, there
so
you go.
Got some poetry in there from the Riverside Writing Workshop that I was in.
Well, I'm glad to hear this story because it's just, you know, Amazon is, you can't compete with Amazon. But there's nothing like, and I've said this before, and it sounds like I'm oversaying this statement, but there's nothing like going into a bookstore and holding the book in your lap or browsing through the stacks and finding something and just reveling in this tactile experience of holding the book, reading, feeling, turning the pages. It's just wonderful. And hopefully there will be small bookstores throughout the United States in the next 25 years. I'm hoping that anyway.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a look at your art and entertainment news. Stick around for Blackstone's special feature.
Ashland native Dr. Frank Romano spends much of his time in Paris these days, teaching and writing. He talked to the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton, about his book Love and Terror in the Middle East.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we have on author Dr. Frank Romano, author of Love and Terror in the Middle East. Welcome, Frank.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you folks today.
Well, we're really glad to have you here, and it's quite a coup for us. And Frank has written this book, Love and Terror in the Middle East, which is, let's not get too confused with the title, because it's got quite a provocative title, but I actually haven't read the book. It's a little bit of a personal journey story. It was a lot more than I thought it would be. It's not a documentary. You know, there is quite a bit of a story there, and maybe you can enlighten our listening audience to that.
Yeah, the love part is...
I was going to be a little reluctant to say that. Yeah, it was a love story.
Yeah, well, there's love, and I guess you can say it's like the I Ching. There's love, and then there's hate, or the love and terror part. The love part, I've just been blessed to be able to work with Jews, Muslims, and Christians in a very contested area, probably the most contested area in all the Middle East, which are the West Bank refugee camps like Jenin and others. And I've been able to get in Israeli Jews into the West Bank, which is illegal for them under IDF mm-hmm. rules, but they're getting them through so they can meet and dialogue with Muslims, Palestinian Muslims and Christians, and people from all over the world. I have, you know, internationals going in with me. That's been fantastic, and I see progress step by step through grassroots efforts and not keeping politicians and religious leaders out, but not taking their lead, not allowing them to lead because too much agenda, as we see in the world, dictated by politicians and basically lining their own pockets. We focus on individual action for peace, and that's the love part. The terror part is... these efforts that I take and with friends to mobilize people, to clarify misunderstandings through dialogue, through contact, haven't come without cost. In fact,
quite a high cost.
exactly. I mean, Charlie, just about a year ago, a good friend of mine, his name is Giuliano Mercamus, who is originally from Israel, an Israeli Jew, a very famous actor, gave up that career to go into the West Bank to start a theater group. He had helped me, advised me, how to engage in these dialogues, what language to use in the West Bank and in Israel, was murdered. My friend was murdered, and I just was... It was incredible because I was writing this just in the middle of the chapter I was writing about our work together in the West Bank. I took a break, went on news, found that there was he calls himself 100% Israeli, 100% Palestinian living in Palestine. And so he is the epitome of the interfaith movement. I found out he had been murdered. I went on CNN and discovered this. And a few months later, I returned to the very spot where he was murdered, and I walked. It was very nerve-wracking because it's in the middle of the refugee camp, which is very contested. The area that served the Jenin refugee camp in northern West Bank served as a center of conflict and resistance to the Israeli soldiers. I walked where he was murdered, and I stayed in the and a block later, I stayed a couple 3 days in the theater group, the theater actually that this man created, and tried to find out what happened to my friend. And my friends from Paris in the U.S. warned me not to do this. I said, well, I owe it to my friend to go into that area to find out what happened to him because it was still very blurred as to whom would want to kill this man who works with both sides, who works for peace. I could also discuss how I even got to the Middle East originally through my experiences in Morocco. But maybe you have other questions, Charlie.
Well, you know, actually, I do have a few other questions.
Okay.
I want to get to a lot of it, but there's a lot to cover. And this is in its fourth edition, so quite the successful writer there, Doctor.
Thank you.
And it's The Storm Over Morocco. Now, there is quite a story behind this. Now, I've heard it, but I think everyone is really going to be fascinated. So why don't we start at the beginning, as they say, and, you know, just give us a brief overview about, you know, what happened in Morocco, what, you know, got you to Paris, and then where, you know, it all led into present day, which is, you know, with all the things going on in the Middle East, as we know, this is probably one of the most turbulent times in this past year, 2011, in the Middle East. It seems like everyone's getting overthrown, getting killed, getting run out of town, and I know you're right there in the eye of the storm, and you can be the one to enlighten us on that.
Storm over Morocco. Well, I share with my friends, this is just following my vision, initial vision that I had 30 years ago. I was in Paris studying, and I was going through crisis. This is before I was married and kind of living a bohemian lifestyle, you know, and taking mm-hmm. courses at the University of Paris. And
tough life.
Yeah, well, It was tough for me because I'm pretty much a country boy now. I was raised, my family comes from Ashland, Oregon, but I was raised in like Santa Rosa, California, worked on farms most of my life, and I went to the city just to, so I could go to law school. Pretty much a country boy and pretty well inundated and by the city rhythm. And Paris is like Manhattan in that regard. And so I said, I'm out of here. I want to get out of school. I was at the Sorbonne studying philosophy. And I left my job as a waiter at the Place de la Sorbonne in Paris and just took off. I said, well, I'm just going to take off and go across North Africa. Maybe I'll get into the Middle East. And I thought I might try to participate in this interfaith movement I heard about. Now, this was in 1978, Charlie. This was a long time ago, 1978.
I remember it.
So I took off, and I headed down, you know, I took trains and finally got into Tangier, then Casablanca. I was sleeping on the streets. I didn't have much money. And I met this, imam from a local mosque who seemed really like a nice guy. And he said, well, you want to learn about Islam? I can take you into the mosque. And this was
For our listeners, iman, what, you explain that terminology.
Yeah, iman is equivalent. It's kind of equivalent to a minister or priest in Christianity or to a rabbi. Even though they're a bit different, but you can say he's a religious leader and an imam in a mosque, which is the church of the Muslims. He's the leader. He leads the prayers.
So okay. Forth.
And so he invited me into this mosque, and I thought this was great. This is on one of my lists that I had to do before I went to the Middle East to do interfaith with Muslims, Jews, and Christians. I need to learn about Islam. So I walked into the mosque. And he invited me to stay there, and after a week, I shook hands with the imam and said, thank you very much. I'm going to continue my trip across North Africa. Went to the main door, and I'm looking at the door, and there's a guard in front now. The door was open before, and now it's closed, and he's not letting me out. I went back to the imam, nervous and wondering, you know, what's going on? I said, you've got the wrong guy here. You know what my plans are. And he said, well, would you calm down? We want you to learn about the only true religion in the world, and we want you to help recruit for us. He said, and I responded, recruit for you? Is this a religion or this is an army? And no response. And that sort of set the tone for the next stage. And the next stage of this quandary is, am I going to get out of there? Am I going to become one of them? And we got very blurred as to, you know, whether I was going to become one of them. They tried very clever brainwashing techniques. The only way out was to escape, and after I began playing the game and stopped asking questions and criticizing because I was livid being held against my will, I found a way to escape, got back to the middle of Casablanca where I found a family, thank God, that would hide me because I knew they were looking for me and until I could flee the country and return to Paris. I never got to the Middle East then, but that vision stayed with me all this time, so that the book Storm Over Morocco ends with me and, you know, returning to Paris, and now Paris, I saw Paris in a whole new light now, because, you know, now I was a free man, and
you valued your freedom.
I almost bent over and kissed the ground when I arrived, and that's the end of Storm Over Morocco, the first book. And so 25 years later, this is still ruminating inside me. I played a very low profile for the next few years. I kept writing down the story, Storm Over Morocco, and eventually got published. But I was really concerned in the beginning that they would follow me because the imam of this mosque in Casablanca, this jihadist extremist group, threatened me. He said, if you're ever to be considered as having abandoned Islam, being a Gentile converted to Islam, in his mind I had converted to Islam, he could execute me.
Do you speak French?
I speak fluent French, yes. I got my PhD at the Sorbonne and in international law, and of course I became, believe it or not, a litigator in France. And if you're going to litigate,
well, I'm sure
there,
you do speak French quite fluently.
I still have an accent, but you have to speak good French.
Well,
then.
You know, this happens to be your lucky day because we have a big following in France on our podcast.
Right?
Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. So,
wow.
To all of our French-speaking folks out there, if you want to say something in French to them, I'm sure they would love to hear you.
Je vous en prie. Alors, merci d'écouter cet entretien. Et je reviendrai à Paris dans une semaine. Et donc, mon mail, c'est frankfro, F-R-A-N-K-F-R-O, @AOL.com. Vous pouvez toujours me communiquer. Je suis vraiment très... J'admire beaucoup de Français qui sont très actifs,
qui agissent beaucoup dans ce domaine de la paix au Moyen-Orient. Souvent, il y a des groupes auxquels je ne peux pas participer parce que je voyage beaucoup au Moyen-Orient et aux États-Unis. Mais j'admire beaucoup des personnes qui sont très actives dans ce domaine. Et aussi, j'y rencontre les Français, les Juifs et non-Juifs au Moyen-Orient, même en Israël, qui participent dans ces mouvements de paix, dans les marches, les dialogues avec moi. Donc, enchanté de vous rencontrer un jour. Mon site web, c'est Franck Romano, F-R-A-N-K-R-O-M-A-N-O, trait d'union, petit L, petit T, .com. Donc, je vous en prie de me communiquer quand vous voulez et à bientôt. Au revoir.
Everything that you've heard from Frank, his contacts and buying the books will be available on justimagineinc.com, yeah, where he'll be the featured author. We'll have links up there to where you can buy his books and how you can get a hold of him and leave some comments and get feedback for him. And once again, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you, Charlie. It's my pleasure.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
To learn more about Dr. Frank Romano, visit his website at frankromano-littlelittlet.com.
Before moving into the new year, we decided to take a moment to reflect on some of the best music from 2011. To do so, we've brought in the host of Maya's Mix on KSKQ 89.5 FM.
Welcome, everyone, to a special edition here on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. We have Maya from Maya's Mix, and Maya has a local radio show here on 89.5 FM, KSKQ, which is on from 2 p.m. in the afternoon to 4 p.m. on Fridays, and where she features all kinds of different diverse music is also available on iTunes. Welcome, Maya.
Thanks, Charlie. Great to be here.
Well, you know, it's great to have you. We've been looking forward to this for a long time. I've downloaded your show. I've listened to you know, different ones that you had. I was just like told Cyrus, we got to have her on because she's always doing something special. What do you got in store for us?
Well, Charlie, what I want to do is share with you and the listening audience my top picks for 2011. There are many different songs that came out, and it's a diverse range that I ended up enjoying for my Maya's Mix show last year. And so what I wanted to do is narrow it down to what are the top picks I have that we should fully appreciate right now.
So in other words, this is like the top 10 of if you were to listen to the radio and you turned it on and you're like, hey, what do I want to hear?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I like that. I like that idea. You know, I noticed from your list, you know, there's some that are, you know, incredibly popular, like Adele, and there's some that are off the beaten path, you know, that are just, you know, good music that you wouldn't normally hear on a mainstream radio station, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe we should share with the listening audience right now what those top 10 picks are.
Let's do it.
Okay. Well, first on the list, I wanted to acknowledge the song Circital by My Morning Jacket. And it's actually nominated for a Best Alternative Album Grammy Award. And it's really, the interesting thing is that it starts with kind of a delicate, airy guitar pattern. And it leads up to kind of an all-out jam and singing. And then it finally slides back into that kind of hypnotic rhythm. So it makes me feel like I'm on a wave as I listen to it.
So you're riding the wave down there, yeah.
I am older day by day. Still going back to my childhood.
My Morning Jacket, you know, they've been around for a while. I've heard them, and I've heard some of their music, you know, a few years back. It's a good pick. Good pick.
Yeah.
Now, you know, do you mind if I go a little bit out of order here?
Sure, go for it.
Well, here's one that's near and dear to my heart, and that is Rewrite by Paul Simon. Now, you know, and I know he just had this new album come out, and he hasn't had something out for quite a while. I don't know how long it's
been. Since 2006.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And some are calling this his best album in more than 20 years. So Beautiful or So What, it's called.
What a title.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that back last year there in the New Yorker magazine, I was looking and there was a poem called Rewrite in there. And it turns out it's the lyrics. It was by Paul Simon. It's the lyrics to this song, but he really transforms it into an amazing song with his guitar playing and his melodies.
I'm working on a rewrite, that's right. I'm gonna change the ending. I'm gonna throw away my title and toss it in the trash. Every minute after midnight, all the time I'm spending is just for working on a rewrite, that's right. I'm gonna turn it into cash.
All right, that comes in at number three. Now, number two, Cruel.
Cruel by St. Vincent. I don't know if you've ever heard Annie
Clark. The only St. Vincent I ever heard of was a church, so enlighten me on that.
Well, the funny thing about this song is that it sounds really upbeat. You listen to it, if you don't listen to the lyrics, it's like, woohoo, oh, isn't this nice, la la la. But then once you start tuning in and listening to the lyrics, they're really sinister. And she's like joyfully saying, she repeats the word cruel a bunch of times.
Oh, uh-huh, okay. So it's a little subliminal there.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, now number four I have here on your list is Annabelle by We Govern We, which is, as you all know here on Get Mind Me Not Stay There, we are huge fans of We Govern We, the Grammy-nominated artist, by the way.
Yeah, what I found interesting is that the lyrics are from the Edgar Allan Poe poem by the same name.
Right, right, mm-hmm. Yeah. She was talking to us about that. They're quite a diverse band. They're from Greece.
Actually, after listening to your interview, I basically realized that We Govern We is definitely my favorite Greek band.
Well said, Maya, well said. Well, they are our favorite. Well, now we see, when I told Anna when we interviewed her from Ventura, California, that they were Ashlyn's favorite Greek band. So
that's what I heard, yeah. And I was like, yep, they're mine.
Okay. All right, number five. Tell us about number five.
Holocene by Bon Iver. This is a very talented artist, and Justin Vernon is the singer. And basically, I get captivated by his voice. It's really smooth and intimate, and he's a charmer to me.
Number six is one that everyone knows and loves, "Rolling in the Deep" by Adele. What can you tell us about that song that we haven't already heard? I mean, it's everybody's heard that song so many times now. What's the background on it?
Well, when I first heard this song, the funny thing is that because she has such a mature voice, I thought she was kind of like an older woman. Uh-huh. But it's on the album 21, which is named after her age. She's only 21.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And this is a song that dominated in 2011, and it really was ranked as the top song account across countless best music lists of the year. I know it's going to win a bunch of Grammys and other awards, and it was on the top charts for many months, number one song on the charts for a lot longer than anything since for the last 25 years, really.
Wow, so she's up there with Michael Jackson status.
That's right. She's going to be known for quite a long time.
Oh, great, great. You know, it's a good song. I know that, you know, of course, I've heard it. And, you know, it's just one of those songs that, you know, I like it. My daughters like it. Everyone I know seems to like it. So
yeah, it has mass appeal for sure.
Yeah, it certainly does. Let's go on to seven.
Okay, this song is quite unique. It's called Tenari Takim Tosam. The group is Tenari Win. And for this particular song, they actually feature two artists from the group TV on the Radio. And it's a music group from Mali, and they've really gained acclaim with their desert blues. And it incorporates, get this, Algerian rye, Egyptian pop, and Led Zeppelin with a really strong bass line. It's a mix of cultures. A really great song. I encourage you to hear it.
Oh, Tenerife, oh, jealous desert, why can't you see you are a treasure? I've seen the world, I love you better. Oh, Tenerife,
you know what? I'm going to, you know, well, for sure I'm going to download this show just to listen to some of this stuff because it sounds so intriguing and, you know, I want to hear that mix. I really do.
Yeah, I like going across the globe and finding music.
We like going across the globe as well. You know, we have, you know, quite a extensive following around the world. And I don't know why. Maybe because we interview such diverse people as yourself. So let's go on to eight.
Eight. Okay, so Otis, featuring Otis Redding, and this is Jay-Z and Kanye West. Who would have known that they'd bring in the legendary King of Soul? And they start off the song with a clip of his song, Try a Little Tenderness.
Love that song. I love that song.
Isn't that a great song?
Yeah.
Then they take Otis Redding's voice and they loop it through in the background of the song as they go through their own modern hip-hop kind of rap groove.
Wow, that song has got such a staying power. I mean, because I remember when Otis Redding came out with that song, Try a Little Tenderness, and then there was a huge hit in the 60s with Three Dog Night, Try a Little Tenderness. And now we've got Kanye West and Jay-Z. I mean, you know, it's run, you know, it's got quite a shelf life, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It shows that it'll, that kind of music lasts forever. You can do some great
stuff. Yeah, that's a good point. It's kind of like, you know, a good music will stand the test of time.
It's true, yeah. So it's really fun to hear Jay-Z and Kanye West kind of trade punchlines across the,
you know. I bet, you know. Yeah. I'm glad I made the list.
Sweet, sweet. Sounds so soulful, don't you agree? I invented sweat, popping bottles, putting supermodels in a cab. Proof, I guess I got my swagger back. Truth, new watch alert. New blows, or the big face rolly, I got two of those. Arm out the window through the city, I maneuver slow. Cut back, snap back, see my cut through the holes.
Damn, Easy and Hov, where the hell you been?
So let's go on to number nine.
Pumped Up Kicks.
I love that title.
Yeah, it's by Foster the People. And it's actually the founding member of that group is Mark Foster. And he was working as a commercial jingle writer when he recorded this song. And you can tell that indeed it really does have a very infectious melody. But underneath the upbeat musical groove, the lyrics actually deal with a kind of serious topic. It's about a deranged youth's thoughts of a shooting spree. Don't let it get you down with that.
No, it doesn't get me down because often I, when I hear a song that, you know, deals in social issues, the subject matter may be very deep, but the the music is always usually, you know, very uplifting. You
mm-hmm.
know. Number 10.
This, to tell you the truth, is my favorite. It might not be everyone's, but something about it really caught me. It's Powa by Tuneyards, and there are a couple other songs that were a little bit more popular, Business and Gangsta from that album, but it's Powa that really hooked me. Listening to it a couple dozen times and digesting the lyrics, I have come to the conclusion that actually the front woman, Meryl Garbus, is reflecting on the sexual power dynamics of a relationship. You wouldn't know necessarily, but if you listen to it as many times as I did, 30, mm-hmm. 40 times, it finally sunk in, and it's really her desire to be dominated.
Really?
Yeah, it's kind of an underlying erotic radicalism, you could say.
And what kind of music is it?
Ukulele riffs and her kind of sultry singing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and she caps it all off at the end with a kind of very striking high note that lasts. It really grabbed me.
A sustaining high note?
Yeah, it's a powerful climax. You can say, I would call it maybe erotica.
Yeah, okay. Erotica, I like that. Wow.
That's how I like my music.
Oh, all right.
Baby, I just don't know.
Where do you come up with these lists? I mean, because that's quite an astounding list you've got there. I mean, this is just, you know, we talked about it in the beginning that these are the top songs that you narrowed down that you would like to listen to on the radio.
Well, I have a Facebook page for Miasmix. It's a group page.
Uh-huh.
So anyone can join. I encourage all listeners to join. And once I think of what the topic will be for my show, I will oftentimes put it out there and say, what are your favorite songs to my listeners?
Oh, cool.
And they're able to share with me what songs they like. And it oftentimes gives me a chance to hear songs that I wouldn't normally get it. I wouldn't even know about. So I've really appreciated the listener input and being able to find music that way. And I also, you know, surf the web and listen to other people's shows and poke around, and there are some great resources I have for finding new music as well.
Oh, great. Well, underneath it all, music connoisseurs.
My blog is a place where you can see all the past shows and also see the playlists and listen to the shows. It's at kskq.org/Maya, M-A-Y-A.
All right. We'll be looking forward to having you on again. Everybody, you know, give it a listen. You'll be glad that you did. And thanks so much for coming in, Maya.
Thank you, Charlie.
All right. Goodbye now. We'll see you next time.
To listen to more of Maya's mix, go to kskq.org.
Dress up in that jacket and them dress up in that tie. Want to deprive I man from my rights. Them a murderer. Them a murderer. Watch them a cool. Watch them a come. Them a vampire. Then we suck out your blood. Watch them a come. Watch them a come.
New York Times bestselling author Kim Harrison returns with the latest installment in the sexy supernatural adventures of Rachel Morgan in A Perfect Blood, available at Blackstone Audio, Inc. this month. Ritually murdered corpses are appearing across Cincinnati, pulled in to help investigate by the Federal Inland Bureau, FIB. Former witch turned day-walking demon Rachel Morgan soon realizes a horrifying truth. A would-be creator is determined to make his or her own demons, but it can't be done without Rachel's blood. As a bounty hunter, Rachel has battled vampires, witches, werewolves, demons, and more, but humanity itself might be her toughest challenge.
The woman across from me barely sniffed when I slammed the pen down on the counter. She didn't care that I was furious, that I'd been standing in this stupid line for over an hour, that I couldn't get my license renewed or my car registered in my name. I was tired of doing everything through Jenks or Ivy, but demon wasn't a species option on the form. Friday morning at the DMV office. God, what had I been thinking? "Look," I said, waving a faded photocopied piece of paper. "I have my birth certificate, my high school diploma, my old license, and a library card. I'm standing right in front of you. I am a person, and I need a new driver's license and my car registered." The woman gestured for the next guy in line, her bedraggled graying hair and lack of makeup only adding to her bored disinterest. I glared at the tidy wearer in a business suit who had moved to stand too close behind me, and nervous, he dropped back. The clerk looked at me over her glasses and sucked at her teeth. "I'm sorry," she finally said, tapping at her keyboard and bringing up a new screen. "You're not in the system under witch or even other." She squinted at me. "You're listed as dead." "You're not dead, are you?" Crap on toast. Can this get any worse? Frustrated, I tugged my shoulder bag up higher. "No, but can I get a dead vamp sticker and get on with my life?" I asked. And the wearer behind me cleared his throat impatiently. She pushed her thick glasses back where they belonged. "Are you a vampire?" she asked dryly, and I slumped. No, I was obviously not a vampire. From all accounts, I looked like a witch. Long, frizzy red hair, average build, average height, with a propensity for wearing leather when the situation demanded it, and sometimes when it didn't. Until a few months ago, I'd called myself a witch, too. But when the choice was between becoming a lobotomized witch or a free demon, I took the demon status. I didn't know they were going to take everything else, too. Demons were legal non-entities on this side of the ley lines. God help me if I should land in jail for jaywalking. I apparently had fewer rights than a pixie, and I was tired of it. "I can't help you, Ms. Morgan," the woman said, beckoning the man behind me forward, and he shoved me aside as he handed her his form and old driver's license. "Please," I said as she ignored me, leaning toward her screen. Beside me, the man grew nervous, the spicy scent of agitated ware rising up. "I just bought the car," I said, but it was obvious this date was over. "I need to get it registered, and my license renewed. I gotta drive home." "I didn't. I had Wade for that, but the lie wouldn't hurt anyone." The woman eyed me with a bored expression as the man took a moment to write his check. "You are listed as dead, Ms. Morgan. You need to go down to the Social Security office and straighten it out there. I can't help you here." "I tried that." My teeth clenched, and the man in front of the counter fidgeted as we both vied for the scrap of worn carpet. "They told me I needed a valid driver's license from you, a certified copy of life from my insurance company, and a court-documented form of species status before they'd even talk to me. And the courts won't let me make an appointment because I'm listed as dead." I was shouting, and I lowered my voice. "I can't help you," she said, as the man pushed me out of his space. "Come back when you have the right forms."
Kim Harrison's teen debuted Once Dead, Twice Shy, and its sequel, Early to Death, Early to Rise, were instant New York Times bestsellers. In addition, she is the author of the best-selling Hollow series. She also contributed to the beginning of Madison's story to the paranormal collection Prom Nights from Hell. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to blackstoneaudio.com.
Thought that I died today, walked off the stage, faded away and through the clouds.
Get Behind Me, Now Stay There is a Just Imagine Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineinc.com. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Lucia Sherman. Good night. Good night. Parting is such sweet sorrow that I should say good night till it be morrow.
You know the one, are you singing along? Thought I'd know just what's